No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here tonight to continue our expectations series. We're most of the way through this at this point now. Today, we're going to talk about Teddy Buchanan, the fourth round linebacker the Ravens selected, and Tavius Robinson, the outside linebacker who stepped up in year two with a significant set of improvements, I think. He'll do that with me is Spencer Peterson. Spencer, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken.
Great to have you back on the show, Spencer. You know, we've had you on Friday Morning GM a few times recently, in fact, to talk about the depth chart for the Ravens. I thought that was a fun episode. We can start with either of these. I don't think there is a set undercard on this one. Who would you like to talk about first?
Why don't we start with Teddy Buchanan? It's funny you say that. I had the exact same thought when I was listening to these, and you were referencing the undercard and sort of the headliner of each of these mm-hmm. episodes, and I was wondering which would be which for this one. So I lay
out the players into category one, two, or three very broadly, and the ones are mostly starters, and the threes are guys on the fringe of the roster, and the twos are the guys who are in the middle who, you know, are, and this is two twos we've got here.
I think we might be at spot 26 and 27 of the roster almost, but I know that's not the exact numbering you have, but
yeah,
very cool.
There you go. Okay. So Teddy Buchanan, pick number 129 out of Cal, the first of their fourth round picks. They didn't end up making that second pick with that weird trade where they moved down five spots and moved up five spots. We scratched our head about that one for a while on draft night, I could tell you, but Buchanan, an interesting pick, inside linebacker. A lot of people didn't have that on their bingo card as being selected early. 6'2", 233. A little bit shortish in arm length, a little under 31.5 inches, but a 4'6", 40. 4 years at UC Davis and 1 year at Cal, which was sort of in the Pac-12, but not really this last year. So he's never really played Power 5 football, I guess we could say. Are Cal's in the ACC now, aren't they?
You know, I would like to weigh in confidently, yeah. But it's hard to keep up these days.
I think that's right. I think he actually did have a year of Power 5 football.
You know, we had a classic Big Ten matchup of Maryland and USC this year, so it's really hard to keep track.
There you go. Teddy Buchanan, athleticism, a plus across the board. He tested in everything, which I always think is a good sign. You know, whenever players are being selective about what they test in, it's usually things they're not good at. There's been very few players who've been willing to test at everything and be bad at it. But I look back to Orlando Brown now and think it wasn't a good thing that he did it, but it did help him last the third round when the Ravens got him.
Yeah, absolutely. Teddy Buchanan honestly was not someone that was on my radar going into the draft, but got more and more excited looking at the testing results kind of post-draft and reading some of the reports.
Yeah, I've been pretty good as a coverage player in college with 7.2 yards per target allowed. Last year, career 6.2, and opposition passer rating of 53.8. So, you know, there aren't too many good coverage linebackers that are available that have their pedigree already set more or less in college. Most of the guys they stop the run very effectively. They often are great downhill players. They rush the passer effectively, but it's pretty rare you find good coverage linebackers. And when you do, it's not usually a guy with Buchanan's size at 6'2", 233. It's usually a guy who's a converted safety playing linebacker and that sort of thing, where it's a smaller guy where there's other questions about him.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like the Ravens have had a little bit of a tough time getting mid or late round, kind of, or even early round weak side linebackers that can cover, even with good athleticism. You have Simpson, you have Queen, a couple different guys that came in with what you would think was the requisite athleticism to hold up there, but haven't really seen it translate on the field in terms of pass coverage.
We're recording this on May 28th in the evening. The Ravens have just had their first OTA open to the media today. And Trenton Simpson, first of all, looked completely jacked. He was off to near the media corner talking to Mike Preston, and he looks enormous. He absolutely looks much bigger than I remember him being. Like, he'll be a thumper. And Harbaugh was asked about him a little bit at the podium, and he said that for him, a player like him, it's taking a step forward in terms of processing is what he really needed to do. And I think it's very well said. There's a lot of information that's coming at him, but there's things he has to just know by heart, which is what's happening going on behind him. And that's an area where Buchanan, who will be a direct competitor of his, is ahead of him right now. And, in terms of the downhill things, I think Simpson, by coming to camp so much bigger, is probably in a good position to do those things well.
Yeah, I would say even despite his struggles last year, Simpson probably has the inside track. I know there's a little bit of a give and take of how much of a player's future you own, but just inside linebacker is a notoriously tough position to adjust to at the pro level. Mm-hmm. So just given that experience in the system at the pro ranks for going into his third year, should probably give Simpson that inside track to start the year.
I would think so. I think there's also on the Ravens, there's very much a hesitancy to give the job to a rookie over a third year player or even a fourth year player. And especially not if, unless they come in the first two rounds where they will make allowances for that. But Orlando Brown, for example, started behind James Hurst for a number of games, and there was no reason for that. It didn't make any sense. And I think it's happened other places as well. I'm trying to come up with examples right now in my head and drawing a blank, but, comes up a lot. In the depth chart episode, we noted how the rookies were significantly lower down than they might end up being by the time the season is over. And I think that's something that that constantly shows up for the Ravens. We'll talk a little bit more about Buchanan as a run defender. And I look at stops and missed tackles, and he's had a good missed tackle percentage career at 7.0%. That's very good for an inside linebacker. And he had 48 stops and 10 missed tackles this last year for a 4.8-1 ratio. And that wasn't even as good as his career ratio of 5.9. Outstanding for an inside linebacker, by the way. Of course, the first 4 years of that were at UC Davis. So I would kind of weight the context in such a way that I think the 4.8 is probably a better number. All right. There are 278 NCAA inside linebackers who rushed the quarterback at least 50 times. His 8.7 pass rush productivity was in the 44th percentile, but he had a very fine finish rate, which reminds me a lot of the other Ravens, particularly both outside linebackers this last year had terrific finish rates relative to their pressure numbers. Madubuike did that the previous year. In an ensemble pass rush like the Ravens have, having a nice finish rate can be perfectly fine, but there do have to be some players that generate that initial pressure. And so the Ravens are going to have to make sure that's the area. If I had to guess where the Ravens might come up short, I don't think it's in finishers. I think it's in who gets that initial pressure.
Yeah. Is there any reason to believe that, that's right around the midpoint? What I believe you said 47th percentile, any reason to believe there's, my apologies, anything that's a little counterintuitive there? People are able to run away from a good pass rusher, anything going on with that number, or should we generally take that pretty much on its face in terms of productivity?
I would take it on its face. That he rushed the quarterback at least 50 times. So it's not a tiny, tiny sample, but it could still be relatively small relative to edge players. So that has to be looked at. The finish rate, which means how often did he get a quarterback hit or a sack divided by the total number of pressure events as defined by PFF. I'm just using their integer pressure events to do this. So oftentimes that includes a contribution to a sack or quarterback hit, and that's fine. That 46.2% is very high for any position. So you occasionally, the really great edge rushers who get off the ball very quickly, they'll often have a very high pass rush productivity number and a relatively low finish rate. And that's perfectly fine because they're creating problems where somebody else gets to be the closer. James Pierce was a guy coming out of Tennessee this year who was exactly in that category we talked about on draft night. Mike Green was more of a closer. He had a terrific sack total, a good number of quarterback hits, and his he was over 40. He was over 40%. I don't remember if he was over 50% last year.
Yeah. Well, exciting to have an athletic linebacker who finishes. Would have, you know, ideally like to see that pressure rate higher, but, you know, a lot of positives there.
Yeah. In terms of some other notes, he was really used by Cal from a lot of A-gap drops. So the Ravens use a lot of simulated pressure. And I want to see a inside linebacker who knows where to drop to and can do it quickly enough. I thought Roquan had some problems with that last year. And frankly, they were kind of overstretching his talent to try and drop him from the A gap and get him to a spot where he could help. I think other teams were picking on him a little bit because of that. And it doesn't have to be necessarily over the middle of the field in the seam somewhere where he can't drop fast enough. Sometimes it could be to the outside where he's got responsibility for the running back and he has to drop back and then, you know, head left or head right to the other side of the field to get to the right spot. So hopefully Buchanan is a guy that comes more natural to and is a little quicker at this point in his career. He has the speed, I think, to spy a mobile quarterback. And at 4.6, he's just on the verge of where you need to be. They're really mobile quarterbacks who are at, you know, 4.45 or 4.50 speed. They still have a lot of time out racing a 4.60 linebacker in terms of getting past him if he's spying them, if that makes sense. You know, they have to create an angle by going around him, and that's going to cost some time. Nice quick downhill trigger from Buchanan. More understanding of that L2, L3 traffic than I usually see in a young player. So we've hit on that a little bit. Not a converted safety or anything as far as I know. So that just seems to have been something he's learned well as he's come up. And I think probably also speaks well to his ability to understand defense in other ways. Because I think you have to have kind of a back-to-front understanding of defense to play inside linebacker and understand the route combinations that can be behind you. And I think that probably speaks very highly to his ability to learn an NFL defense, whatever it might be.
Do you have a sense of, was he the signal caller at Cal?
I assume so. An inside linebacker who plays every snap generally is, but I don't know it for a fact. And I think he was the mic at Cal, if I recall correctly. So I think I'm 94% sure of that. You know, sometimes I literally get asked this in the actuarial world and people, other actuaries understand what I mean when I'm saying that, when I say I'm 63% sure, and other people say, what the hell do you mean you're 63% sure? How can I rely on that kind of thing? But actuaries understand what they mean when they say that. Block shedding, he appears to be, that appears to be his biggest challenge. The thing that he's going to need to overcome is some shorter arms and, you know, having some guards come up on him in level two and how he is able to slip them through some combination of quickness and the ability to shed blocks. Obviously, we lived with a lot of that with Patrick Queen. Block shedding was his big weakness. He had others, but that was his big weakness in terms of his ability to stop the run. So Buchanan will not be, I don't think, too much different than Queen in that regard.
Yeah. You know, blue chip, not a blue chip prospect coming out, you know, late-ish fourth round pick. But, you know, I think if you look up and down this roster, you know, there's not really a better opportunity for someone, for a rookie, you know, other than Starks and Green to get on the field. Yeah. So I think his opportunity set, you know, just warts and all is quite good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, they could, another safety right now, boy, would they have an opportunity because the Ravens are trying everything right now at the other half field safety role to get somebody else on the field. And we saw a lot of time. I'm this summer, I think we'll see Kane and Braid get a complete opportunity. If there's any question about whether one of them maybe could play the back end, we'll find out this summer. And we'll find out from the corresponding moves that are made if they don't. I think both of them are reasonable dimeback candidates. Not really convinced either of them is going to be able to handle a half field role. So we'll see how that plays out. Back to Buchanan for a minute. The pick kind of surprised me on day three. And, you know, you were on the draft show, I believe, at this point on day three, because they had this glaring need on the interior defensive line, but they didn't address it, despite the fact we were getting thinner and thinner in terms of who was left. And they didn't end up getting a defensive lineman until Aeneas Peebles. And that wasn't until round six. And you know, the trade back at the end of round four cost them the opportunity to get two of the guys. Josh Farmer was one of them. I'm trying to think of who the other guy was, but there were, you know, a couple of different defensive linemen they could have taken at that point. Jordan Phillips might not have been taken at that
point. I was going to say, I think Jordan Phillips may have been on the board at that point.
Yeah. So those were some pretty significant things. They're going, you know, if you want to be a rookie and try and make the Baltimore Ravens, be a nose tackle right now. He's got Jason Jones is in camp and he's playing. They announced today that they weren't going to be able to get John Jenkins on the roster until after Michael Pierce is cut, which won't happen until 6-1 because of the contract situation. So they've got a wait to get John Jenkins practicing, and they've got one other guy, Okoye, who's in there. He looks huge, but him and Jones have an opportunity during OTAs here to show out if they want to.
Yeah, nose tackle, maybe safety. Maybe one or two other positions that are escaping top of mind here, but are probably the most likely, if it were to happen, a end of camp player for player swap
yes.
of an Ojabo, of someone like that, assuming depth holds up, that might be the targeted position.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. And there are so many teams that'll have that extra safety, and the offered price for Ojabo will not be particularly high from other teams, I don't think. That would make a lot of sense. And there, you know, you might find four other teams that have a safety they're willing to let go, who they're maybe it's not even a question of he's going to start for them. He's a question of whether he's the third or the fourth safety, and they're willing to let him go for Ojabo, even though it's not the, but it also, it does have to kind of fit the whole fourth year for fourth year guy under most circumstances. It's rare that you get a third year guy for a fourth year guy, say. All right, so Buchanan, we're expecting to play a lot of special teams this year. An emergency Mike or Will replacement. That's, by the way, that I can't overstate the importance of this, but he's got to replace Roquan at the Mike spot if something happens to Roquan. There's nobody else. I mean, I don't think that would be Simpson. I think Simpson will stay a Will, but I think that's the only, you know, he had an injury at either weak side linebacker position. At either inside linebacker position means that Teddy Buchanan is getting playing time. All right, special teams, of course, he should have a four-unit core ST role. I think he'll be covering and returning punts and kicks, and we'll see if it's any different from that. But hard for me to imagine he wouldn't. That should really help assuage the loss of all the inside linebackers they had who had big special teams contributions in Harrison and Board and Welch. All right, tell us what a good season looks like for Teddy Buchanan from your point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so I've defined this as 55th percentile, which is obnoxiously close, but slightly different than the 60 you typically talk about.
Okay.
Basically, you know, what is right above what I would expect for kind of median contribution, anything above this, I'm you know, happy and positive about. Sort of that's why I'm setting that 55th percentile kind of chalk line.
Thank you for knowing that that's above the median and not necessarily above the mean.
Yeah, there you go. But I think first thing, exactly what you were just talking about, establishes himself as a plus special teams.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober. Or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Contributor who's active for nearly every game day, expecting 17 weeks of activation, you know, barring some roster snafu throughout the year, but, you know, substantially active every week. I'd say about 100 to 150 snaps from a combination of late game leads coming in to substitute with a big lead in the fourth quarter, injury or potential ineffectiveness from guys in front of him. No questions after the season about having a spot on the 2026 roster headed into the offseason. And then finally, in case of a longer trial, plays at roughly a C-minus level that prevents the team from falling off the table and immediately needing a replacement via street free agent.
Okay, that's really good. That's extremely well done. My good season, I'll just read it, similar to yours. Active on a weekly basis to fill key ST role. Competes or rotates with Simpson at some point during the season and for weak side linebacker time, 75 to 200 snaps. By the way, it'd be a great season for the Ravens if he doesn't compete at all with Simpson. Simpson wins the job, never looks back, plays well. You know, Buchanan never gets on the field. Sign me up for that one right away. Alternatively, fills in for Roquan in case of a brief injury. Special teams play is solid, and the defense versus the run and pass are at or slightly below the league average, providing a runway for 2026 growth.
Yeah, like you just said, that was kind of the challenge. On one hand, I think pegging what the expectations for a fourth-round pick is, there's some pretty easy benchmarks. You can say what you expect, but conversely, exactly what you're just saying, that some of this is predicated on what happens with the guys in front of them. So not wanting to make too convoluted of a decision tree of, you know, if this guy gets injured, then this happens. You know, and what could be a really good season for him personally could be bad for the Ravens. So right. Ideally, he's only coming in fourth quarter replacements. Simpson, you know, keeps him off the field in any other circumstance. And you get that special teams contribution. I would be thrilled with that.
Yeah. And by the way, I thank you for two things about the way you've done the good and the great here. I assume your great is going to be like your good, but one is, you're relatively terse with the information presented. You got a lot of thoughts are built into what you just said, and you did it in a way that was very quick and very specific without being terribly quantitative. It's you know, it's qualitative in nature, and I think it's extremely well done. I have had a problem on with a few guests, not most of them, but a few guests who go on for 10 minutes on what a good or great season is, and it's tough. Yeah. All right, let's talk about a great season. What does that look like to you?
So similar to the way I think you define it in terms of 80th percentile, I would say top end special teams contributor. I think argument could be made for him to be a Pro Bowl representative for special teams. Mm. I normally wouldn't peg things to Pro Bowl recognition, but I think a lot of special teamers can get that nod. So just saying that level of special teams contribution forces his way onto the field, playing in sub packages or in a platoon role, logging 200 to 300 snaps. You know, Trenton Simpson could still play well, but he, through his own play, demands getting on the field in some form of packages. If forced into regular playing time, provides a C-plus or better level of play with clearly improvable parts of his game heading into next year. And then in the competition for 2026 will heading into the offseason.
Outstanding. I'm very similar. play and or circumstances pushes play time to 25% plus of snaps, displays an intriguing combination of ILB contributions, run, pass, and rush, which in aggregate are slightly above the league average and provide hope for growth. Plays plus core special teams role that softens blow of departing inside linebackers. Ravens do not draft an inside linebacker in 2026 prior to round six. And I don't have no problem if they go out and they try and get a special teams ace late in the draft. But if they drafted a third or fourth round special teams player, inside linebacker, I think that'd be an indication that we either have a failure from Buchanan or a failure from Simpson. And it might be a final failure from Simpson, frankly, if that were to occur, that they went that high in the draft to get a linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, only place I would kind of push back a little bit there, and I know you said sixth and then third and fourth. I would say something like fifth round might be perfect as the Jake Hummel replacement.
Okay.
I'm with you. I think we might have 10 or 11 picks next year. At that point, you know, a late round inside linebacker for that fourth linebacker role is something I'd be completely okay with, but generally aligned with what you're saying.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Talk about Tavius Robinson. He's entering his third season. He's 26 years old now. Active for all 17 games of the regular season last year. And he was active for both playoff games. He did actually miss the AFC Championship game, was inactive for that 2 years ago. That's still the only game he's ever missed. And he played 60 postseason snaps, though, this year. So the Ravens relied on him much more heavily than they did as a rookie, as he jumped from 28% of the snaps to 42.4% of the snaps between 23 and 24.
Yeah, no, he's a guy who took a big step up. I think there were some questions after his first year about what his role would be. Coming into this year, you know, or coming out of into this next year, 2025, I think very clear position. When talking about the impact Mike Green would have on this team, it's kind of funny. Actually, Tavius Robinson is probably the least affected of guys on the current roster.
Yeah,
you talk about how Green would be rotating with Van Noy, with OA, potentially pushes Adisa Isaac, Ajabo down the roster. But, you know, almost no mention, actually, conspicuously absent from that conversation being Tavius Robinson. Yeah. You know, coming out of last year, he really has that kind of run-stopping early down role fairly locked up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great point, by the way, that he's the least impacted. It wasn't really until I was preparing for this episode that I realized just how great a year Tavius had had. But he did a whole lot of things extremely well. Very balanced set of contributions that was aggregate very good for the year. So for starters, he has 17 stops and just one missed tackle, which is an unbelievable ratio between the two of obviously 17 to 1. But one missed tackle, I didn't check to look at other edge players. The 2.9% missed tackle rate has to be among the lowest of all edges, depending on how you define it in terms of a minimum of snaps. It's outstanding total for the year. He was targeted twice during the regular season. One was a PD. The other was a completion for 0 yards where he made the tackle. I think that will do it. He did give up a 21-yard play to Najee Harris, who beat him in the wild card game for it was a minus six plus 27. So it was a little screen pass or outlet pass. I'm trying to remember the play visually from the game, but I can't do it. I do know it was minus six plus 27. He had 3.5 sacks, up from one as a rookie. His pass rush contributions, I think, were better than his PFF grade. And I'll give you the central reason why. The basic PFF grades do not adjust for the circumstances in which you play. And because Tavius Robinson is an early down pass rusher edge player who has to be more concerned about run defense, he has to have more snaps where he's effectively two-gapping his tackle there to try and make sure he doesn't lose leverage inside or outside before he can come as a pass rusher. So play action often will put him in a bad place where he doesn't have the good opportunities that a third down pass rusher or a situational pass rusher will. So his pass rush rating comes out a little lower, and it's to be expected. And I don't think it's a source of any concern at all. And by the way, to give you an idea, he played just 14% of his snaps on third or fourth down. So he could have kicked inside. They always talked about that for years, but they had two guys they really liked in Jones and Matabike, so they didn't really do that. And the Ravens, by comparison, had 26% of their snaps on third or fourth down. So he's only playing about half of the third and fourth down snaps. You could probably guess that a lot of the fourth down snaps or the third down snaps he might be playing might be short yardage, where he's really in there to defend against the run anyway. So the really good pass rush opportunities are passing him by in terms of when he's on the field.
Yeah, I mean, also makes that missed tackle number even more outstanding that he just didn't accidentally have, you know, a missed tackle that he turned someone in the backfield even. That wasn't a bad play. Yeah. One or two more of those to drive the number up.
Well, there you go. I'll tell you another huge thing that is really a big deal at the end of the year is you look at Matabike's season. I don't think Matabike had a bad season by any stretch. I mean, we paid him a lot of money, and a lot of people think he kind of slightly underperformed, but I think he was a valuable part of the pass rush. I think in terms of what they got from him, it should have been about what they would have expected. But Matabike had six penalties. I believe five of those fouls were personal fouls, four roughing the passer and one other might've been a face mask, but it was one other. Tavis Robinson was not penalized the entire season. I mean, that's really, really good. Because even when you're not rushing the passer as much, and he hit the quarterback 12 times, didn't have a penalty in that, you would think that there'd be some risk there, but also just for an illegal hands to the face where he sticks his hands right up in the mask of the tackle at one point. Nothing like it. Wasn't offsides, you know, nothing. So that's a really valuable element of his game that I think a lot of people say, well, that's okay. You're supposed to have no penalties, you know, kind of thing. No, you're not. It was really good.
Yeah. I mean, you can almost think about it like a war or a, you know, outs above average kind of basis, that there's some baseline expectation of penalties that you would expect, and going sure. in below that is a positive contribution.
Yeah. All his time spent on the rush side, he didn't play the Sam, but he did drop the cover 18 snaps the whole year. Like we mentioned, he was targeted three times total, including the playoffs. It was only about 6.1% of the pass snaps that he was in. He was dropping. I think it's fair to say, as good as his season was, that there's still room to improve as an edge setter. One of the things I haven't been a fan of is when he gets taken care of by a tight end. And normally he's playing rush and not Sam, so the rush side doesn't typically have a tight end on there, but it can in a YY situation, or it can if somebody comes out of the backfield. And at tight end or fullback, I'd lump them together as guys who should not be able to block Tavis Robinson for 400, Alex. So it's really a something that he's got to get a little bit better at there.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, he wasn't billed as being a, you know, elite run stuffer coming out of college. Mm-hmm. I think there was a little bit of a question about what he actually was exactly, but I don't recall him being, you know, a Courtney Upshaw that people are saying, you know, he's going to be an elite run stuffer and then we'll see the pass rush productivity come or anything like that. So it's been a positive surprise or positive development that he has been so good against the rush, but you know, on one hand, work to be done. On the other hand, that's a bit of an opportunity that this is a player that can continue to improve.
Yeah. And I will say, I look back before this thing, I sometimes read these, I don't want to do that for everyone. He met my expectation for a great season in 2024. He completely met it. And he's probably the only player where I didn't know that until I put together this pairing here. It's way above expectation in terms of what he did this last year, and great developmental year for Tavius. On special teams, by the way, he played both sides of the field goal team. Doesn't have a huge set of responsibilities there, but he also does the kick and punt return team. So you want some bigger bodies in the middle of the field on kick returns. On punt returns, you try and get a block sometimes, and often a longer player like Tavius has real value there. So he's on those teams, but not a huge. He's not a four-unit special teams player. He's a smaller role. Still good, but a smaller role. Let's move on and talk about what a good season looks like. I'm dying to hear yours on these, especially with how well they were structured on the first one.
Yeah, so again, 55th percentile expectation. I'd say first and foremost, maintains current rotational role against the run, logging 400 to 500 snaps, or about 40 to 45% of total for the year. His snap share could be reduced if the team is playing with more leads, thus fewer run snaps, but may pick up some marginal snaps with departure of Harrison. Continues the positive trajectory in pressure rate with 2 in 2023, 13 in 2024, and ability or able to step into a bigger role if needed due to ineffectiveness or injury, more likely, of the guys in front of him.
That sounds excellent to me. A good season to me. Maintains weekly activation despite pressure for playing time from a deep outside linebacker core. So what's what you said earlier about there being, he's the least impacted of the outside linebackers. I think he's active every week. I don't think health could hold him out, but I don't think it'd be a healthy scratch situation, where that's a risk for Ajabo or Isaac this year, frankly. And the possibility that six outside linebackers are rostered would also be something where there'd be more competition for game day activations. I'd say he plays between 35 and 45% of the snaps at the 60th percentile with no more than a moderate step back in quality. I do expect, by the way, his rate statistics were so outstanding. I think he's going to have to take a step back and say missed tackle rate, it might triple and it'd still be okay. His penalties could go up to two and that would certainly be okay. But we don't want to see a big step back in any particular area there. A small step forward in terms of pass rush win rate, based on Smith's tutelage. Health of the outside linebacker group allows him to shine on special teams with contributions across five units. That could happen. I'm basically projecting him into everything except for punt coverage. I don't think he'll do that, but I think he'll stay with kick coverage, and he could be on both return teams possibly. So we'll see how that works out. But that's my good season for him. How about a great season?
So great season again, 80th percentile. I'd say first and foremost maintains priority spot against the run. Potentially takes more snaps by kicking inside on race car, rush nickel, or other pass rush focused packages, giving an interior pass rush in the mold of Za'Darius Smith or Pernell McPhee. Increases pass rush productivity, whether that be pressure rate or sacks, given increased opportunity set. Typically don't want to give a results-based number, but something like five sacks or more, but while still contributing to a top five unit in sack production. So not getting them from just bulk stats because he came in for injury, but being a positive contributor to a unit that's getting a lot of sacks overall. And then forces the front office to strongly consider giving him a divisible benefit contract in the 2026 offseason to keep him beyond.
Damn, I whiffed on that one. That's a great one to have as a great season. Okay, my great season, play and circumstance increases playing time to 45 to 55% of snaps. Personal pressure rate improves by 40% on a per snap basis or more from 2024. It effectively, I think, doubled between his first 2 years. So that was good, and creates many second man opportunities. Continues to avoid penalties, play the run well enough, although not at the same consistency for either as in 2024. Regularly, not necessarily consistently, he's visible in terms of impact plays, but I have no specific expectation of a high sack total there. Four sacks, 3.5 sacks again. Either of those would be fine if his role was basically the same. I think he had a good year. Basically duplicating his season from last year, I think would probably still qualify for a great season again. I think that he doesn't really need to grow. He needs to consolidate what he did from his amazing growth in year two to kind of stay on track to be a guy that you want to offer a divisible benefit deal to. And he's in that quality level where it might make sense for both parties.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Spencer, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter X at Spencer CP. That's SpencerCP. Always looking to talk Ravens there.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, hit me up if you have an idea for a film study short. Please like and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. And anything you can do to promote the show is greatly appreciated. Showing this to this one other person makes a big deal to us. You folks are the most loyal listeners I can possibly imagine. And it really shows up at the listen totals, and appreciate each and every one of you. Spencer, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.